Welcome to the Citizen Media Law Podcast, providing practical knowledge and tools for citizen journalists. I'm Colin Reinsmith, digital media producer at the Citizen Media Law Project. This week, David Ardia talks about the lawsuit against iBrattleboro.com, and I'll speak with Sam Bayard about an important decision on anonymity.
Chris Grotke and Lisa LePage, co-founders and owners of iBrattleboro.com, a widely acclaimed citizen journalism site in Brattleboro, Vermont, were sued on November 16th for libel based on a comment submitted by one of the site's users. The lawsuit, which was brought by Effie Mayu, alleges that David Dunn, the former executive director of an emergency medical services organization where Mayu works as a volunteer, libeled her in a comment on the site. According to the complaint, Dunn posted a comment on September 30th in which he accused Mayu of having an adulterous affair on the organization's premises and said that others who had signed a petition requesting his resignation had engaged in similar behavior. The complaint doesn't appear to make any allegations that Grotke or LePage authored the allegedly defamatory statements, only that they failed to edit or remove the comment. As a result, Grotke and LePage are almost certainly shielded from liability under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. This is not even a close question. Section 230 states, quote, "No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another content provider," end quote. This immunity preempts state law causes of action, like defamation claims, that are based on publisher liability. Moreover, immunity exists even if a defendant edits comments or otherwise exercises discretion in selecting which comments to post or remove. Strangely, the local newspaper in Brattleboro, Vermont, seems to imply that this is an open question. According to Mayu's lawyer, Margot Stone, who was quoted in the local paper, iBrattleboro must follow the same rules as any publication, and its owners are responsible for the site's contents. This is simply wrong as a matter of law. Courts and commentators widely agree that Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act protects website operators and bloggers from liability based on the defamatory statements of commenters.
Earlier this week, an Arizona appellate court handed down an important decision in Mobilisa Inc. v. Doe. As we wrote on our blog at citmedialaw.org, the case involved the question of what standard should govern requests for discovery of the identity of an anonymous internet speaker whose speech allegedly violated a plaintiff's rights. To learn more about this story and the significance of the court's decision, we're joined again this week by Sam Bayard, Assistant Director for the Citizen Media Law Project. Now, Sam, before we get to the specifics of the court's decision, could you talk briefly about this case and who was involved?
Sure. The case involves a company called Mobilisa Inc. And according to the court opinion this week, the dispute arose out of this email in June 2005. And apparently the chief executive of the company had sent a sort of personal email to a woman that he was having a relationship with who wasn't an employee of the company. And then about 6 days later, an anonymous person sent another email that contained the body of this first email. And the email was sent to a number of people, including some people that are on the management, some members of management for the company, Mobilisa. And so the email had the body of the chief executive's original email, and it said in the subject line something like, "Is this the kind of company you want to work for?" So that upset the chief executive.
So it didn't go over too well.
No, it didn't go over so well, and it also upset the company. And then so back in mid-2005, the company filed a lawsuit in Washington State Court originally, and they sued, it's called a John Doe lawsuit, this kind of lawsuit, and that means that they sued an anonymous defendant because they didn't know who sent the anonymous email.
So what happened next?
In the course of things, both Suggestion Box and this anonymous defendant objected to the discovery request. And so there was argument about it before the court. And the ultimate sort of result was that the court ordered the Suggestion Box to disclose the defendant's identity. And at that point, both the anonymous defendant and the email provider decided to appeal that ruling up to an appellate court.
So then this decision that just took place earlier this week.
what we got this week was the decision by the appellate court basically reversing the lower court's ruling that, you know, that Moby Lisa could serve the subpoena and get the identity of the client. Now, it wasn't a sort of full resounding reversal in a lot of ways, because it sort of said, you know, lower court, you did a good job as far as it goes, and you applied almost the right standard to this question of when do you order this discovery, but you didn't quite do enough. We want you to do one more layer of inquiry before you order this kind of disclosure, and you didn't do that, so we're remanding it to you. But as far as you went, you did a good job. You just have to, you know, address this last layer of inquiry.
Why did you find this case so interesting?
I found this case interesting because I see it as sort of part of a trend that's been going on in the last maybe few months, maybe years. It's a trend towards sort of more protection for anonymous speech. Now, the decision itself, which I tried to sort of give a flavor of in my post, is very technical, and sort of it involves this choice between two standards. And one is this standard from this Doe v. Cahill case from the Delaware Supreme Court in 2005. And the other is this Dendrite International v. Doe case from a New Jersey appellate court in 2001. And it gets very involved and sort of very, very technical about the difference between the two cases and which one is a better standard. And that's all well and good, but to me, it's kind of a strange argument. See, because ever since Cahill came down, Cahill has been sort of the great opinion that anonymous defendants are always citing to, you know, protect themselves when these kind of subpoenas come down. And so the lawyers love this case. It says the plaintiff has to come forward with sort of real evidence enough to survive a, you know, summary judgment standard before disclosure of identity will take place. So that's a great case for anonymous defendants. And Dendrite is another case that these same lawyers, they're always citing this case as well to say, hey, look, judge, before you order a disclosure of my client's identity, you got to meet these requirements. And they're very close to the Cahill standard from anyone else's, you know, before this case. I don't think a lot of people even perceived much of a difference between these two cases in reality. What I think is cool is that, you know, now we've got appellate courts arguing about which of these two very protective standards, you know, they're going to apply, which is a great, you know, to me is sort of a great stride forward.
You've been listening to the Citizen Media Law Podcast, a production of the Citizen Media Law Project at Harvard Law School's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. To read more about the stories heard in this podcast, visit our blog at citmedialaw.org.